Trek Geeks is proud to have Fansets as our presenting sponsor. You know, Fansets is the place for amazing pin collectibles with over 500 officially licensed Star Trek pins and new releases every month. Stay tuned for a special discount code that'll be good on your next order at fansets.com. Fansets. Our pins have character.
Hi, this is Armin Shimerman. I play Quark on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and you are listening to the biggest little show this side of the Gamma Quadrant. It's the Trek Geeks Podcast with Dan Davidson and Bill Smith. You figure out who's who.
The Standards and Practices Bureau at Podfleet Command. It's the biggest little show this side of the Alpha Quadrant and the flagship of the Trek Geeks Podcast Network. Greetings to you, Trekkies, Trekkers, and Trek enthusiasts all over the galaxy. This is the Trek Geeks Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. This is episode number 314, and I am your co-host, Bill Smith. Excited to be here. We've eclipsed last year's number of podcasts and left it in the dust. And we're getting ready to psych ourselves up for Vegas in just over 6 weeks. Hard to believe. When I say we, I do mean my illustrious co-host and myself. 10 years ago, I asked him a question that would ruin my life. He is the... he's Dan Davidson. I don't even have the strength to do it.
There you go.
Well, Dan, what do you want?
I want to continue doing podcasts, even though I had no idea what they were when you asked me that question 10 years ago. How you doing, buddy?
Good, buddy. It's hard to believe that 10 years have gone by and that we've been actually putting out shows for almost 10 years.
It is pretty incredible. When I look back, I'm like, that was a long time ago. And here we are, 314. It's pretty incredible. I'm excited. I'm happy. I'm looking forward to the next 314. You will too. Trust me, you'll get used to me at some point, and then we'll just continue on and have a grand old time with the next. So when we get through another 314, Bill, we'll be at 628. How about that?
Wow, I'm amazed that you can do simple arithmetic. When we start. You know, when we started this 10 years ago, I had no gray in my hair, and you actually had more hair. And by that, I mean you had this one really ugly one that stuck out of the middle of your forehead. Those days have gone.
They're gone.
Passed us by.
They're gone. I also had all brown in my goatee, and that is pretty much all white now. So thanks. I used to say, oh, this one was, you know, Max, and that one's Becca, Becca, Max, Becca, the kids. No, that's all Bill Smith right there.
That's not remotely true because you have kids.
Yes.
Now, I don't have kids, so I shouldn't have any gray whatsoever.
Ah, so here comes the blame.
But you see it all here. You see it coming through my head.
Yeah.
It's, I largely blame you. Dan, the other thing I blame you for.
Here we go.
Is how great a time we had at Trek Long Island.
That's a good thing to be blamed for.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, we had a fantastic time, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I flew up from North Carolina, met you in Long Island, and you drove down from New Hampshire. And at the time, I was not aware that we were hosting a panel with two big-name Trek stars.
Yes, I must have forgot to send you that memo, but during the planning stages, they let us know that we were in addition to the two panels that we did in one of the smaller rooms, we were actually going to be on the main stage hosting a panel with two unbelievably awesome Star Trek legends, Mr. Armin Shimerman and Mr. Ethan Phillips. And when I had mentioned that to you, you were like, "We're what? What are we doing?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, it's right here, dude. We got it. Sunday afternoon. It's gonna be us." And you're like, "Okay." So we did the panel, and I got to say, we had an absolutely fantastic time. The room was packed, standing room only, if I remember correctly, in the back.
Yeah,
it was. And we had a fantastic time with these two gents. And then we had an even bigger surprise when we got back home, is that we actually have the audio of the actual conversation that we had with these two wonderful people.
Yes, absolutely. And thanks so much to Trek Long Island, and in particular, Matt Kaplowitz from Trek Untold, for getting us the audio of the panel. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a little bit, but Dan, first, you and I,
us,
should probably do a little business with America and the rest of the world, because we are listened to all over the world.
We're global
and stuff.
Galaxy.
We're a global empire. Dan, as always, we want to take this moment to thank our friends at Fansets for being the presenting sponsor of Trek Geeks.
Yeah, indeed we do, man. It was just so great to hang out with Lou and John at Trek Long Island, and they had a bunch of new pins that weren't even listed on their website before the convention that were brand new that weekend. But fret not, good listeners, they are available right now at Fansets.com. From Star Trek Lower Decks, you can now get Lita, and Grand Nagus Rom, okay, fan sets. Loading Badgie is available, and Yellow Uniformed Mariner, and oh my goodness, the soft and cuddly Moopsie. And just a heads up that a not so nice version of Moopsie may be on the way at a later date, just saying. Also, the latest in the universe of Trek pins is now available all the way from the Delta Quadrant. It's Lieutenant Tom Paris, complete with his Delta Flyer. And if you weren't able to attend Trek Long Island, you can still get your hands on the convention-exclusive Discovery pin, which features the lovely and talented Captain Michael Burnham.
Lots of new releases this week, Dan. So everyone, get on over to fansets.com, grab all those great new pins, and then at checkout, be sure to enter the special discount code TrekGeeks for 10% off your entire order. That's TrekGeeks in all capital letters with no spaces, and of course, don't forget, when you spend more than $30, you automatically get free shipping in the United States.
Fansets. Our pins have character. And we thank our friends at Fansets for being the presenting sponsor of Trek Geeks.
So, buddy, as mentioned, this week we have the audio of our panel with Ethan Phillips from Star Trek Voyager and Armin Shimerman from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And like I said, I found out on the ground that we were doing this panel, and it talk about a pleasant surprise.
It was so, for it me. Was so fun. It's funny. I do apologize if I thought we both got the email. I'm not sure, but it doesn't matter because, you know, you took it in stride, and we had no real planned discussion points, but you're a pro, and we had a pretty good time up there.
Yeah, we did.
It was fun. And both of them were just extremely generous with their time and their stories. And it's the first time that we've had to, it's the first time we've actually met Ethan in person ever.
Yes.
We have met Armin at conventions before, but just at his table to sign an autograph, to get an autograph on a photo or something like that. But two wonderful human beings. And we've had Armin on the show before to talk about PanCan and everything. But, talking to him in person, just this is a whole nother level, I think.
No, I agree with you, and especially in front of an audience.
Yeah.
You know, because these people want to hear stories. They want to hear recollections. They want to, you know, learn more about these actors. And I think it's really great when you can pair a couple of different actors from different shows.
Yep.
Because you get different experiences, and, you know, you eventually learn that, you know, these guys have worked together and all that stuff. So we want to set the stage for this audio really quickly. So first, before you and I did the panel, we stopped by the tables for both Ethan and Armin and said, hey, we're Bill and Dan. And we get to Ethan's table and, you know, we mentioned, yeah, we're going to kick it off. We're going to try to ask you something that you probably haven't been asked before. And he's like, Yeah, well, why don't you ask me why I hate Dan? And I'll be like, all right, I will ask you. First up, Ethan, why do you hate Dan? And I say that because the beginning of the audio from the panel chops off that question.
Yes.
And so Ethan asks this, or I ask this of Ethan as we sit down on stage, and he begins with his answer of why he hates Dan. And he leans into it. He really does.
He's a pro.
Absolutely. The other note is that you will hear in the audio some clicking and some mic movement. It sounds like there was a potentially loose cable on one of the cords, or the mic was fidgeting a lot. I'm not sure whose it was, but we were having such a good time laughing and talking up there that really could have been any of the four of us.
Right.
So you will notice that noise, so we asked you to bear with the audio. Otherwise, it's pretty good and really just a fun conversation.
Yeah, it really was. And again, a surprise that we were able to have it to bring it to our listeners here on the show. So an added bonus, so to speak.
Definitely. And so from Trek Long Island, here is our panel with Ethan Phillips and Armin Shimmerman.
Most pernicious, odious.
Yes.
Odious.
Odious.
Vermin.
Vermin. Yeah,
man. Yeah, I worked with Odious.
Yeah, Odious actually. Yeah. Dan is he's, I don't even have the words.
Vile.
Vile.
He's
vile.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Well, having said that, is he the most vile person in the world? No.
No.
There are people that are worse than him.
Not many.
There was a meeting of them in a phone booth recently of the two people that are worse than Dan. No, I've never met Dan. I think he's a wonderful guy.
He's not.
What the hell do I know? Is he a wonderful guy?
Yeah, he pretty much is.
I try to be, but...
He's pretty funny.
He's largely tolerable.
He's got very hairy feet.
I do. I'm not going to show anybody, but I was a little hurt for a second because I told Ethan out about back before we came on that I have the perfect, without a doubt, best Neelix impersonation of all time.
You want me to hold that?
Okay, I'm going to give you a little rundown, then I'm going to do it. This is Neelix when he loses his lungs.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Davidson. He'll be performing nightly on the Lido deck.
Yes, try the veal.
Wait, yeah. 9 o'clock show, completely different from the 3 o'clock show. Thank you so much, Dan. That was fantastic.
I've worked a long time on that one.
Armin, I'd like to ask you a question that no one has...
I can't do that, so no.
Okay, that's cool. I'd like to ask you a question no one has ever asked you before at a Star Trek convention.
Yeah, I bet you. Okay.
Okay, yeah. And, I mean, because I'm sure you guys get asked a lot of questions that, you know, repeat over time and over the years.
2 hours.
Two hours. But, Armin, which sock do you put on first?
That's a great question. You mean on my feet?
Yeah, preferably. Preferably.
Are you Klingon? For you discovery
sometimes
people
they
out
Klingon.
There.
Yeah, sometimes they Klingon.
Yeah.
I would say, yes. Yeah. He dresses me off, and my right foot. I can believe that.
I've dressed Armin many times in the past.
And we're not talking about in theater.
No. This is at home when Kitty's not there.
Yeah. Right, of course. Of course.
What's wrong with us?
I literally have L and R on my socks so that I remember.
You know?
See?
Oh, yeah, you do.
I'm not even joking.
He does.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
If anybody listens to Trek Geeks, I'm the stupid one, so I need L and R on my shoe.
This guy fell out of the stupid tree. He hit every branch.
He did.
It's amazing.
Speaking of which, do you have a joke for us today?
I have a joke.
Oh, my God.
No, sit down. This guy goes to a proctologist. And takes his clothing off and assumes the position. And the doctor says, "Now, Richard, I want you to try to relax and not get an erection." And he says, "Doctor, my name is Andrew." He says, "I know, I'm Richard."
Wow.
I'm going to ask a stupid, smart question. How many thousands of jokes do you think you have cataloged in that mind of yours?
I would say at any given time about 400 or 500.
I would say more.
Maybe more. It depends. Everything reminds me of a joke.
Yeah.
Really?
If you ask him about bread, he's got 12 jokes for bread.
I have a joke about bread.
Let's hear it.
Let's hear it.
It's, again, it's a little blue. this guy says to his friend, he says, man, I'm really having a hard time in bed. I just can't seem to, you know, get it up. And the guy says, have you tried rye bread? He says, rye bread? He says, oh, yeah. He says, come on. Next day, he runs into another friend. He says, well, I'm really having a hard time in bed. I'm not performing really well. And the guy says, have you tried rye bread? He said, no. He said, finally, the guy goes to the baker. Beautiful woman behind the counter. He says, give me 12 loaves of rye. She says, 12 loaves? Won't it get hard? He says, everybody knows about rye bread but me.
I was wondering how you were going to tie this whole bread thing back.
It's teretic. It's teretic.
Ethan and I went to the gym years ago together. We were separate, but we had our appointments at the same time at the same gym. And I used to watch him come in at 12 o'clock and start working out with the trainer. But he'd start by telling a joke. And wouldn't you know, by the time the hour passed, he hadn't lifted no weights. He had done nothing but keep the entire gym in hysterics. And
hated exercise.
Why can't I remember your trainer's name? My trainer's name. Brian. Brian Shires. Brian Shires.
Brian Rybread.
Brian Rybread. Wonderful man. Brian was wonderful. Yeah. Right after you.
I remember you coming in.
On a more serious note, one of the things that Bill and I are very proud of is that we, along with our dear friend John Billingsley, were able to start the idea of the Trek Talks Telethon that we have every year. And the first thing I want to do... Thank you. We've been able to raise about, what, $500,000 in 3 years?
Yeah, close to half $1 million.
Absolutely fantastic for Hollywood Food Coalition. But one of the things I want to do right now is thank both of these fine gentlemen for being part of that Trek Talks 3 this past January. We had an absolutely fantastic time. Of course, Kitty is always such an important part also. I just wanted to do that quick thing on Trek Talks 3 because I wanted to kind of segue into something that's very near and dear to your heart and everybody's hearts, and that's, of course, PanCam. Wanted to talk a little bit with you about that. I'm sure you've had several conversations of how it got started, and if you could tell everybody a little bit of that story.
Sure. What PanCan, what Dan is talking about is an organization that abbreviated is PanCan, and it's the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. And what Kitty and I have been, and Jonathan Frakes and John Billingsley, and Juan Carlos Cotto, Manny Cotto's brother, have been heading up for the last couple of years is raising money for pancreatic cancer. For those of you who do know and for those of you who don't know, my wife is a 20-year survivor of pancreatic cancer. And years ago, she had a dear friend, oh my God, I'm getting old, I'm forgetting names. Who was the lady who was the lead in Facts of Life, the older lady? Charlotte Ray. Charlotte Ray had pancreatic cancer. She was recommended to Kitty to talk to Kitty about her experiences, and they became very close, enormously close. And PanCan asked Charlotte Ray to be a spokesman, and Kitty would go with Charlotte to events where she would put Charlotte on a soapbox so she could look over the podium. And they would talk. And when Charlotte passed away, not from pancreatic cancer, she too was a survivor and was able to be cured of that. But when Charlotte passed away, the organization came to Kitty and said, will you be a spokesperson for pancreatic cancer? And Kitty said, yes. And so for years, we have been collecting money to find a cure, to find markers for pancreatic cancer. What I mean by markers is that one of the problems with pancreatic cancer is that when you have the symptoms, it's usually too late. When you start to turn yellow or where your white blood count goes up, it's usually too late. So we're looking for a marker that a doctor can identify and say, oh, this looks like you might be, in the future, a victim of pancreatic cancer. So that's what we're doing. When Kitty was diagnosed 20 years ago, the survivability rate was 3%. It has gone up to 13%. Still not good, but four times as good. Jonathan Frakes lost his brother Daniel to pancreatic cancer. John Billingsley lost his mom to pancreatic cancer, and Juan Carlos, of course, lost his brother to pancreatic cancer. So thank you for asking me about pancreatic cancer. Once a year, we have a march. We just had it recently. It's called Purple Stride, where in this past year, 60 cities had marches around the country to raise money and awareness for pancreatic cancer. We would like to eradicate not only pancreatic cancer, but all cancers from humanity. We need to find cures for these things, and we would love to do it in our lifetime. I don't know if that'll happen, but we need to cure this. And if anyone, God forbid, if anyone should hear of a relative, a family member, a friend, a coworker who has been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, please tell them to look up PanCAN, because that organization will direct you towards expert doctors, give you support, not only for the patient, but for the family around them. It's a great, great organization. I hope none of you are touched by pancreatic cancer, but should you be, remember in the back of your head, PanCAN, pancreatic cancer.
Yep.
Thank you.
Absolutely, yeah. It, unfortunately, it's probably something that many people have been touched by, someone they know. My father-in-law passed away from pancreatic cancer a little over 5 years ago. The Purple Stride, there's actually a Star Trek-themed group that you have, correct, people can join?
Frakes and Kitty and I started Trek Against Pancreatic Cancer, and we've had that in effect for about 7 or 8 years. And we have raised, but thanks to the fans of Star Trek and other people, we have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for pancreatic cancer research. So, yeah, thank you. But it's not us; it's you. It's the people who contribute and help, because somewhere along the way, we want to save lives. We want to save lives. It would be lovely if we had a trans. What do you call those? I should know this. Those devices that Bashir has, where he just scans you.
Oh, yeah, tricorder.
It would be lovely if we had one of those and you could be cured of any disease. Unfortunately, that doesn't exist yet. So.
It's me. I should probably turn my microphone on. Have the two of you ever worked together?
Yeah. We have. We did a production of Hamlet together.
Really?
Yeah. And it was a very good production.
He played Gertrude and I played Ophelia.
That's not true. I played Polonius, and he played Claudius.
Yeah, we had a good time doing Hamlet. We also did Boston Legal together.
We did 3 episodes of Boston Legal together.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. I forgot all about that.
I remember the last day that we worked together on that. Ethan said to me, I'll never work again. And he went on to do tons of work. I'm the one who never worked again.
I remember there's so many memories from Hamlet, and we had a lot of fun, and it was a very good production. I remember I would, as Polonius, I would stand behind this curtain, eavesdropping on Hamlet talking to Gertrude, and I realized, and what Hamlet was saying to Gertrude, Gertrude was sleeping with Claudius, the man who murdered Hamlet's father, and Hamlet was, you can't sleep with him. This is the man who killed my father. And she was so in love with him. And he said, you know, it'll be difficult the first night not sleeping with him. And the next night, it won't be as difficult. And it was basically what he was saying, he was doing cognitive behavior therapy in the 1600s. And it made me realize Shakespeare knew everything. Yep. He just knew everything.
Wow.
And that's been the greatest pleasure of my life, is doing his plays.
Me too.
It's funny when
this man is a scholar.
Yes.
Teaches it.
Yes.
I mean, he knows Shakespeare better than anybody I've ever met. He's like a Patsy Rodenberg or something, where he has acres of text. He knows it all. And you even know the little things like Timon of Athens and stuff, you know.
Yeah, I do know Timon.
Yeah, nobody talks about that.
Yeah. Were you joking at first that you played Gertrude?
Yeah, I played.
Was that the idea of Profit and Lace? Is that where that came about?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Exactly.
All right, just wanted to make sure.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, you brought up Profit and Lace.
I did. I had to. Big fan. Who's a fan of Profit and Lace?
I'm not. Don't anybody raise your hand. I really did not like. Not because I got to play a woman. No. That was fine. I love that. Although I was rather large chested, everybody on the set just went like that. The hard part was the high heels. on grading. I was on grading. But no, the problem with my dislike for that episode is that my character didn't learn anything from being on. Mm-hmm. That's
right.
What I didn't
learn. Yeah.
That's right.
Armin came up to me when I first got Star Trek. We were at a little gathering at Major Roddenberry's house, and I knew of Armin because of our New York theater days and stuff, but I'd never met him. And a lot of friends said, "Say hi to Armin." And he came over to me, was sweetest, you know, shook my hand. He said, "Hi, you know, I'm Armin." I said, "I know who you are." And he was very great. And he said to me, and he just reminded me this, and I never forgot. He said, "Just remember now on Voyager, you're not Starfleet." Meaning you're not going to be used as much as the other characters. And don't worry about that. It's because you're not Starfleet. And I remember, and I was very grateful to know that. And I always wanted to thank him for that. So.
And the comic characters are better anyway.
Yeah.
Hear, hear.
And interestingly enough, you gave him that advice. Neelix got to wear a comm badge and Quark didn't.
That's very
right?
True.
Neelix got to wear a comm badge and Quark never did.
That's true.
Right.
But that's because they were on a ship. They
well,
had
that's
to
true.
Communicate.
That's also
right.
True.
We didn't have to communicate that way.
You just went to the bar.
Everybody came to my bar. I didn't have to reach out to them.
That's right.
And they never paid.
Well, you know, the economics of the future are somewhat different.
Yeah. I used to struggle with Michael Dorn. I would say, "You got to pay for this drink." I had these pads, you know, and I would say, "Just push any button." "Why? Why do I have to do that?" I said, "Because you have to pay for the drink. That's we don't have money in Star Trek." And I said, "Michael, don't you guys play poker? What do you play with when you... matchsticks?" So he would punch the pad and I would be happy.
That's pretty good.
Michael,
I wish we
Michael
had a
Dorn
bar in
does
here.
The best Ed McMahon I've ever heard in my life. Because whenever I see him, I do Johnny Carson. So I fall into doing Johnny Carson, and I go, "You know, this is actually kind of fun. I did not know this." And as soon as I say that, Michael Dorn goes, "It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, Ed McMahon. He is a truly funny man, Mike."
He is very funny and very thin.
Yes.
Very.
Yes.
Yeah. As he said to me a couple of years ago, he said, some friends of mine, he said, are saying to him that, "I think I can take you now, Michael."
That point about Michael brings up a comment that I think I read recently in an interview that you did, that there was discussion that he wanted you to return in Picard season 3, not as Quark, but as the Ferengi that gets beheaded in the bar. What a friend.
Yeah, I actually told that story here yesterday. Yeah, he asked me if it wouldn't be great if I killed Quark off, and I went, "No, no, it wouldn't."
No.
No.
Now, you both have the distinction of both having worked with Renée Auberjonois. Yesterday, of course, was Renée's birthday. Do you... Absolutely. Obviously, you worked with him on very different shows. Obviously, Ethan, you on Benson, and, of course, Armin on DS9. Do you each have a favorite remembrance from your time on that particular series with Renée?
Wow, you know, I have so many memories of Renée. But for whatever reason, the one that pops into my head right now is Clayton always wore his glasses on a chain, and he never put them on. But he would wear them. Every episode of Benson, you will see Clayton with these glasses hanging off a chain, and you'll never see him. And one night I remember we were getting ready to tape, and we went out there, and we were halfway through the first take, and he said, my chain, my deck. And he got to go off, and he'd forgotten his chain. I remember that. We used to sit backstage. We had built a gum tree. There was, you know, me and Katie and Renée, you know, we'd enter from this, and there was a fake wall, and we'd walk out into the kitchen. And I still chew gum constantly. And I used to put my gum up there, and so Katie started putting her gum up there, and then Renée, by the end of the fifth season, we had this massive tree of gum. It's a little disgusting, but he was a unique person. Nobody like him. Wonderful, brilliant stage actor. Nobody could do Molière better than him. He was a genius at it.
Genius. genius at Molière. I'm looking down at my shoes, and the only reason I have these shoes is because Renee introduced me to clogs.
Okay.
And
he turned me on to sushi. My first year at Benson, he said, "We're going to go get sushi." I said, "You're going to get sushi. I'm not getting." He said, "Trust me. Just trust me." I said, "Okay." So he took me to the place, and I had sushi, and it was delicious.
He and Judith were incredible. Judith is his wife. Were incredible gourmets, and like you, they introduced me to phenomenal foods that I've never had before. But I do have one memory, but it's not of the show.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Renee and I and Judith and Kitty used to take vacations together, and we took a vacation to Ireland once, where we were hiking lovely hills of Ireland, and Renee, of course, being much taller than any of us, was way ahead of us. And he said, "I'm just going to go over this rise and see what's on the other side." And we said, okay, we'll catch up to you. And we're climbing up this hill. And then we see him running up the hill that he's just gone down, going, "Go back, go back, go back, go back." And the next thing we saw was this bull running after us.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. Oh, Lord.
Huh. Wow.
Needless to say, the bull did not catch him or us, for that matter. But that's one of my favorite. We like you said, Ethan, I spent a lot of time with Renee, not only on camera, but off camera. Unique, special, talented, dear. I love the man.
Absolutely. So if any of you have questions for these two wonderful members of our Star Trek family, please feel free to come up here to the center mic. And I guess we have a mic handler right here, and you can take a moment to pose your questions.
Before we take that first question, I do want to say one thing about Renee, even though we have these two wonderful people on stage. Odo was my favorite character on Deep Space Nine. Excuse me. Today he was my second favorite character on Deep Space Nine.
You're such a suck up.
Yes. And one of the things that I am so thankful to people like Armin and Ethan and all of the people that have been in Star Trek is their willingness to come out and talk to the fans and sign autographs and take pictures. One of the things that I will always regret is when Renee had his table in Vegas, I always wanted to go up to him and thank him for that character and his portrayal, but I never did because I didn't want to bother him. I never got to talk to the man who was probably one of my greatest Star Trek heroes in Odo. Don't do what I did. They are here to talk to you and share their stories. Always remember that. It's something that I will always regret, and I did the exact same thing with Aaron.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
I told this story. Who was at the panel yesterday? Oh, good. So I can tell this again. It'll be because it is another Renee. It's another Renee story. His character's name was Clayton in Benson, and mine was Pete. And when he was doing Deep Space Nine and I was doing Star Trek Voyager, one day we crossed paths. He was coming out of stage 17, and I was coming out of stage 8. It was a sunny afternoon, and he was walking towards me, and I was walking towards him. Nobody saw this, but as I got closer, I said, "Clayton, the governor's really, really angry at you." And he went, "Peter, Peter, Peter." And we passed each other in full Star Trek makeup and did this bit from Benson.
That's amazing. All right, first question.
Armin, you were in the pilot of a TV show that is probably the most insane fever dream of a show called Cop Rock.
Oh, Cop Rock, yeah.
Yeah, and you were in a scene where you were in a courtroom where everybody got up in a gospel
song. He's guilty, judge.
And I was just wondering, like, were you prepared for what you were walking into? Like, did you think, like, oh my God, what is this? Like, you know, like,
It was different. It was a show. It was a musical. It was a musical
by NYPD Blue creator, by the way.
And I must say, when the jury popped up in church robes and started singing, "He's guilty, judge, he's guilty," that I wasn't expecting and was gobsmacked. What the is happening? And who's
forgot. The guy from New York, you told me you said to say hello.
David Wall.
David Wall.
David Wall and I were playing opposite attorneys, and I thought that was hilarious, that they're Tweedledee and Tweedledum playing opposite attorneys. And while, no, so the answer to your question is, no, I wasn't expecting it, and I thought it was really incredibly innovative. And I think what happened was the show finally went off the air because they couldn't keep up the schedule. They couldn't write three songs every week for a new, and have people learn it. But it was great, and it was the first time. Oh, another name I forgot. Peter Onorati. Peter Onorati, a wonderful actor, was introduced to the world pretty much on that pilot episode of Cop Rock. So he was terrific.
Thank you. How you doing?
Good, good, good. How are you?
This is for Ethan. So first I want to thank you because you actually answered a childhood question that I had, which was, did you and Renee ever run into each other on the set as you were both filming?
Yeah.
And you confirmed it. But what I want to ask you is, as somebody who grew up watching Benson, what was it like working with those various stage actors such as Inga and Renee and Robert? And
oh, it was extraordinary. You know, that was all I had ever done with stage. I'd never really done any. I think at that point I had done one film called Ragtime, and. Bob, Guillaume, if you look at my IMDb site, it'll say he was my mentor. He took the time with me to explain what sitcom acting was, which he explained to me as freeze-dried farce, so that you're as big as you are when you're doing, you know, a flea in her ear, but it's contained in this small. And he was very kind and generous with his mentorship, so I credit him in my IMDb. Renee, of course, was also Inga, all of them incredible theater actors. And it was just an honor. I went from being just this little off-Broadway guy to all of a sudden on this huge thing. I was making a little money for the first time in my life. And this is how I realized I was making money. I was shopping at Mayfair. There was a Mayfair supermarket on La Brea and Sunset. And I used to love, I still do, creamed herring. But I could never afford creamed herring. And like once a month, I might buy a little jar of creamed herring. So I'm walking in Mayfair, and it's like the second week I'm doing Benson, and I pass the creamed herring. I go, wait a minute. Wait one fucking minute. And I bought two huge jars of creamed herring. I'll never forget that. I was so happy.
As a treat?
I just eat cream. I eat herring constantly. Herring and sardines are like my main food.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Jonathan. Thank you so much for being here. My question is, what is it like to have an action figure of yourself?
Ooh. Oh, question.
That's a great question.
Well, you can play with yourself in public.
And good night.
Snatch that right out of
it. You gotta be quick. You gotta be fast.
Wow.
Two kinds of people on this stage, quick and just left out in the cold. Wow. Okay.
Armin?
I was at a convention. It's the same answer. I was at a convention, and the last question I got was, what's it like to be a... No. Oh, yeah. I understand you're an action figure doll, and what's it like to play with yourself? And he was no more than seven when he asked it.
Innocence.
And I, of course, didn't. I was doubled over in hysterics. Sure. And I just said, no answer.
It's great to have the action figure. It's also great to have Neelix and Quark pins from
Fans.
Yes,
look at that.
Absolutely.
Just hanging around.
Okay. Yep.
Hi. I wanted to ask both of you gentlemen, what would you like to see your characters do that they haven't done yet?
Get paid.
Marry seven of nine.
Oh, gee. Captain seven of nine.
Is she a captain?
Yeah, she just got promoted to captain.
Oh, spoiler, sorry.
How do you know she's a captain?
Sorry.
Hey, it's been out for a year.
And you know what? Captain of the Enterprise.
Really?
Yes.
How come I don't know this stuff?
Because you don't have any lungs.
Oh, you've been eating creamed herring.
Didn't get the memo.
And I actually don't have a question. I just want to say thank you for your craft. Thank you for your generosity of spirit towards our community. And thank you for your fellowship.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, I have two questions, both for Armin. One's silliness, the other's technical question. So I ask them both, and you can answer as you wish. So first, it's a Shakespeare question. And then, of course, I had heard or seen that originally the plays were done with all male casts, you know, historic reasons or whatever. But now, of course, in some productions, they'll choose to have a female actor playing a male, a male actor playing a female, whatever. So the technical question is why? And then the silly question is, do you like root beer? Yes.
Do I like root beer? Yes, I like root beer. So that's an easy answer. As far as changing the sexes of characters in Shakespeare, or perhaps in any play, as long as it works, and I don't care what your sex is, as long as you're talented. As long as you can do the role and bring something to the role, I have no problem with Johnny playing Gertrude. If he can bring something to the role that I haven't seen before, I have no problem with Kitty playing Hamlet. I got no problem with that. Yep. If she can bring something to the role. And you're right. In Shakespeare's time, all the parts were played for men. So for the predominance of the roles are male roles because he was writing for men, male actors. So a lot of women are left out of Shakespearean productions because there aren't female roles, not enough. Although what he wrote for the women was extraordinary. But that aside, I'm sorry, I'm a teacher. that aside, I don't care what sex you are, what race you are, if you can bring something to those parts that I have not seen before, then I'm in love with that casting.
I remember in the... you probably remember this in the 1970s when Diane Vanora played Hamlet. She was the first female Hamlet, I guess, in America, and she was extraordinary. She ended up doing a thing I worked with her on, and she was just a wonderful woman, but very brave to do that because she knew she was going to take some flack, and she did take flack.
And that was here in New York. That was at the Public Theater in New York.
A question for the both of you. You were both responsible for the creation or the first portrayal of your alien species. What was your thought going into that, and especially with the rich lore that Star Trek already had, what were you trying to come across with your original performance?
You go first, because I have a lengthy answer.
It just was another... something I had to inhabit. I didn't know anything. I did try a few things early on where I thought, well, he's an alien, so maybe I would try to do some things that were like, they once handed me some potatoes, and I started eating it with my tongue and not using my hands, and the director said, why are you doing that? I said, well, this is how the Talaxians use it. No, they don't. He's just a guy. So I learned early on he was really just a guy with a lot of rubber on his head. But they wanted the humanity... that's how we're going to relate to him. And so I dropped all that crap. And I just wanted to make sure that he it's all we ever want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
What have we done? We want to look like it's really happening and that it's not fake. And if we get caught acting, we're screwed. It's like a wonderful line that, why are names so hard? Who is that amazing person?
Bill Smith.
Me, thank you. Michael, the director who did what was that play? Do you know that joke with a guy? Michael.
We're old men.
We
can barely remember our lines.
This is like
names.
There's a joke where the two old guys are talking, and one guy says, I went to a restaurant last night. I never had food that good. It was so extraordinary. And the guy says, what was the name of the restaurant? It was called, Oh, Jesus. What's that flower with the thorns and the red rose? He says, Rose. Rose, what was the name of that place we went at? Michael, he directed the play by Edward Albee. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
I don't know.
Oh, fuck me. God.
Rose?
Anyway, he's a very famous actor, and he said to somebody, I love that. Can we do it again? But this time, would you do it as you? And that's one of the greatest acting things I'd ever heard in my life. So the thing is if you're feeling yourself coming through when you're acting a part and you do something with it, that's acting. And if you don't, it's great acting. And that's what you're always aiming for, is this revelation of who you are under these circumstances that are imaginary. And you can bullshit and bullshit and bullshit. But the camera knows, and it's real hard. On stage, you can get away with it. You can practice a believable moment and then repeat it every night for 9 months and not be in it. But in camera, you have to be in it. And that's a lesson that takes a while for you to understand and learn.
That is brilliance. I hope you wrote that all down, because that is the key to acting.
Mike Nichols, thank you.
Exactly. For me, I did the same thing. I started out. Well, I don't want to talk about that first episode on TNG, but but as Quark, I thought, oh, he's an alien. I have to be an alien. About the sixth episode of Deep Space Nine, I was in my trailer. The trailers are really small, and the bathrooms are even smaller. And I was standing in front of the toilet, peeing. And there was a mirror right in front of me. And I'm looking at myself in the mirror with all my makeup and the ears and the orange and everything. And I went, you don't have to play alien. The makeup says alien. Just be yourself. You don't have to play alien. And so that was a great epiphany for
you. You learned that lesson. I was doing Galileo. I was playing the little monk. This is back in 1730. And he was a little monk, and I wanted to make him holy. And I was thinking, how do I make this guy really holy? And then a week before the first night, I went in the costume, had a monk's robe, and I went, I can do cartwheels in that. They're going to think he's holy. You know, and you realize the makeup and the set, and they do so much work for you. You really just have to tell the truth, and you'll be fine.
Now, I can tell you about TNG.
oh, I can't wait for this.
What a piece of shit I did.
Wait, do you mean the suitcase?
It's a suitcase.
No, but not the suitcase. I was a suitcase before I was a Ferengi.
Okay.
It was a paycheck. It was a paycheck. No, I got to be on Star Trek. It was really exciting. I got beamed in. They told me, the Ferengi, you're going to be the new Klingons. And I screwed that up really badly.
I highly doubt that.
Oh, I did. I mean, they were supposed to be a menace. Can you see the Ferengi as a menace? That's because I did it wrong. And so Quark, as I've said millions of times, Quark was my attempt to resurrect the race after I had screwed it up so badly.
And I think it was a resounding success.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a success. Yeah. But and the makeup was tougher than yours.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for your roles on DS9 and Voyager. My mom and I watch an episode of DS9 and Voyager almost every night. It's streamed on a TV station here, but I just wanted to ask a question.
Both getting residuals.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go.
I got one the other day for 7 cents. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yours is newer. I got one for 3 cents. Go ahead.
We're earning as much as some poets, which is great. Go ahead.
Your costumes are both fabulous, but if you could have any other costume, let's say on like a holodeck episode, what would you prefer if you were allowed to do any holodeck episode and be in like any outfit, like Bashir was able to be like James Bond-esque thing? Like, what would you guys would have liked to be in costume, but still as aliens? You know.
You answer.
I don't know. I love my costumes. Bob Blackman was very good to both of us. Yeah. I probably, because my costume was so warm, I probably would have liked to have had something a little bit lighter. Yeah. Quark's costume was always made of like sofa material. Mm-hmm. So it would have been nice to have like maybe one of those things that the Dabo girls wore. That would have been good.
No, it's right. Blackman used, for my costume, he used upholstery, he used sofa cushions and what kind of stuff. And I would have liked to have been a swimwear model for a little while.
I'm not sure about that. Thank you.
Thank you, though. It's not a silly question. It's just a very silly answer. I apologize.
Silly people.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
What's up?
So my question to you is actually, to both of you, is if you had an opportunity to sort of start a new show, and you had the ability to sort of cherry pick people from different shows to sort of make the cast, is there anybody in particular you'd love to sort of bring on and interact with?
Terry Farrell?
I would bring in all my friends who are all very talented actors. Nobody knows this, but there was a period of time when Renee and I were trying to pitch a program, a new TV show. And it was going to be a program about a science fiction program a la Star Trek, but all the actors, it was all really about the backstage life of what was happening on this TV show. But the people, the show itself was going to be a Star Trek ripoff. And we were going to make fun of all what happens behind the camera. Now, you have to understand, my set was very serious. Yours was not as serious as Nuss, no. So that we were going to try to amalgamate the different auras on the various Star Trek shows. But certainly I would try to bring as many of my good friends who are very talented, who I've worked with, or some of my students that I've taught over the course of the years, and give them an opportunity to work with some of the good actors that I have had the great, great, great opportunity to work with.
Armin, I have a quick question for you. I want to go back to the wardrobe question for just a second before we get to the next question, because I know we're wrapping up on time pretty soon. In Far Beyond the Stars, you got to wear normal clothes. Yeah. You were a human. Did you find
That's
yourself...
Human,
excuse me, yes. Did you find yourself, because you've been on Deep Space Nine for so long, working with all of these friends and castmates, were you comfortable? Were you out of your element? Was it something that you didn't expect?
I was comfortable. I didn't have to wear makeup. I was very comfortable. And I got to play a different character, which they allowed us to do every now and then on Star Trek, to play somebody totally different. But I do remember Pat, who was our prop guy. He came over to me. I was playing a character named Herb. And he came up to me with a pen or something for Herb's character. And this was like the sixth season. And he looked at me, and I was not in makeup. And he had seen me thousands of times out of makeup. But he went, "It's really difficult for me to work with you this way." Far Beyond the Stars is absolutely the cast's mm-hmm. favorite episode. It's the one that we are most proud of. And so it was great. And it was just... Listen, at that time, I was doing two TV shows at the same time.
True, yeah.
So playing a third or fourth character, it was just, water off my back, yeah.
So even though it was a prophet vision or whatever, you still were only one character on Deep Space Nine, and your wife was two. I just want to make sure.
Yes, and she'll lord that over me, absolutely. But I did get to play various other versions of things, yeah.
Hi, how you doing? So I have a question. What would you guys like to have your characters do in the future? Like anything that you would like them to evolve in some sort of way? Like, for example, like you've already, Amaris, you've been in Lower Decks, and we see your character evolve. And hopefully, Ethan, we see you in Prodigy in some sort of fashion as well, and later in the future. Is there anything like you would like your characters to do, like evolve or do something different?
Um, live?
I would like to get a moon.
Finally.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Finally, yep.
We've got just a few minutes left, so we'll go through these last two questions.
Yeah, I've already gotten his moon.
Hi, Armin, again.
That's another story. Yes, ma'am.
Hello again, Armin, and hello, Ethan. These are just silly questions. So I listened to the Delta Flyers podcast, and I listened to your interview during the strike, and it was amazing. We have a lot in common, especially being long-suffering Met fans, which they are winning right now.
Oh, God. Why do we bother?
Oh, my God. I don't know.
What are we doing?
I don't know.
Oi.
Yeah. So baseball's in my DNA. So the question for you, Armin, now is take me out to the holodeck. What recollections do you have on that episode?
I remember it was great, except some stupid person decided to shoot it right next to LAX. So we were constantly waiting for planes to go over. So we had to stop constantly. But this is what I remember the most. Those of us who play ball well, I'm one of them, but not as well as Max. Max was, if Max had not been an actor, he would have been a professional baseball player. Yeah, he did. And all the people that looked like they could play, Nana, Sid, Cullum, they didn't know anything about baseball. So I remember Max, who's a righty, had to play it as a lefty, otherwise his talent would just have showed up. So he had to do that. So he was always watching, trying to get the really horrible people who didn't know how to play ball at all to look good on camera. And how the rest of us had to look bad on camera playing ball. But it was great because we, for one of the few times I got out of the soundstage and got to work outside, so that was nice. Despite the planes and the fumes. Yeah. Oh, it was a great game.
Okay, brother.
And we've got about 2.5 minutes left.
Okay, to finish up, mine's kind of a silly question, so you take it in the spirit of which it's given. If there was a crossover, do you think Cork would have eaten Neelix's cooking?
Wow.
You know.
It's a lot of Leola root.
I was complimented twice in 179 episodes. And I know exactly when they were.
And that's two more times than I was.
It was an episode, I remember this because it was the first time I was, the other time was, the captain said it was very good coffee or something like that. Or Harry Kim wanted a second thing of Leola root, and I kind of went, wow, you know, that's so great. But it was in fair trade, and I was about to go down and meet another Talaxian who was a drug dealer or something. I don't remember exactly what the setup, but I was putting myself in a situation of life or death. And I had to do the right thing. And I went to see Robbie, and I remember we shot it on a set called the Science Lab, which shot very few scenes there. I shot a scene there with Jennifer Lean when we had closure, but they never included it. And I go to see Robbie, and I go, you know, I know you've been in this situation. I have to go down, and I have to do this thing. And he said, just do what your gut tells you, be honest, or whatever he said. And as I left, he said, by the way, those are really good Andorian sweet roots this morning. And Neelix is about to go down and die, but he stops and goes, whoa. You know, I think they might have cut it, but my original take was, wow, God.
I don't like my food.
Yes. Wasn't he incredible?
Yes. Absolutely. Extraordinary. Thank you.
And wasn't Armin incredible as Quark? Yes, absolutely.
Folks, please.
But the answer in your, to it, for me anyway, is why would I eat his cooking when I had Replicator?
Good point.
Well, let's just say that for the sake of argument, you're with him. There's no Replicators, okay? Let's just leave that out.
Would I have to pay him for dinner?
if you were starving in the middle of the Delta Quadrant.
You know,
this is getting deep.
It's real deep.
Yes, I would.
That would be a great series, The Odd Couple, Quark and Neelix. Yeah.
We could have opened a restaurant. You could have been the chef, and I could have been the bartender. Yeah.
folks, please give it up for Armin and Ethan. Thank you so much, guys.
Yes, thank you so much. Armin Shimmerman and Ethan Phillips, folks. Big round of applause. Thanks, guys.
And thanks again to Trek Long Island and to Matt Kaplowitz from the Trek Untold podcast for getting us this audio. So excited that we could be able to share it with everybody that wasn't in the room, because it definitely was, I think it was one of the last panels of the weekend. And I think now we see why. It was hilarious.
It was hilarious. And got to thank everybody who joined us, filled that room. It was a special hour. And of course, thanks to Armin and Ethan. Ethan just, he's quick. He has stuff. He is funny. He's like, and his Johnny Carson, I was going to say he's like Johnny Carson, but of course he also did a Johnny Carson impersonation. So it was fun.
Backstage, you and he were trading Johnny Carson. And eventually I think you slipped into Ed McMahon, which I wish we could have done the whole interview that way. That would have been amazing.
Yes!
Now, for those of you listening who don't know who Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon are, just please don't tell us.
You youngsters.
Don't tell us, because we're going to feel even older than we are. And thank you to Armin. Thank you to Ethan. It was a fantastic conversation. So great to spend that time with them on stage. And here's hoping we can do it again sometime.
Okay, so for anybody wondering why there was a pause of great length right there.
Well, no, it'll be cut out.
Oh, no, we can play it, because this is good. You're going to laugh your ass off.
Well, so, it'll be on Patreon.
Okay, right before we started recording, Sue's downstairs prepping stuff for dinner, and she asked me if I would cut the jalapenos. So I did.
Oh, and you touched your eyes.
And I wanted to get up here real quick, so I forgot to wash my hands, and I just rubbed my eyes, and now I am dying.
Oh, my goodness, dude.
Yeah. Ouch. It'll go away. I'm good. It'll be fine.
Don't rub your eyes again.
Yeah. No, not going to touch anything.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So, huge thanks to everybody involved. We're looking forward to going back to Trek Long Island next year.
Yes.
So mark your calendars.
Marked.
All right. Dan, we also have to thank the band 5-Year Mission. They, of course, every bit of music you hear on Trek Geeks. It's been an honor to be associated with them the last decade. And we can only hope that it's the kind of thing that we get to be listening to music from them for a very, very long time. We want everyone to head out to 5yearmission.net. Get those discs in your hands, because nothing beats physical media. I'm here to tell you. And you're just going to become a huge fan of the band. So that's 5yearmission.net. Get those albums right now. Just do it.
Go.
Do it. You got to do it.
Get them. Get them. And then next year we go to Fark Long Island. It'll be even better. Oh my gosh.
Wow. That was the shortest Farkism ever.
Probably one of the best too.
Hey, it's probably the one that made the most sense, quite frankly.
Ah, there you go. That's funny.
And I didn't even write it.
I didn't either. Just popped out.
Yeah. Fark Long Island. Well, there's many times I've wanted to say Fark Long Island, but not that weekend, let me tell you. Dan, of course, as I randomly click because I lost my place, don't forget, Dan, that you and you and you and you and you can all support Trek Geeks by subscribing to us on Patreon, where you can get exclusive perks. And Dan, you're getting ready to send out some pins, and you're designing other pins.
Yes, yes, yes. The Patreon pin for this past year is ready to go. I've got it right here in my hot little hand. So as soon as we get back from Vegas, those are going to be going out. I'm working with our buddies to get the next year's pin, and we've got a couple sketches. And oh my God, it's killer! It's just going to be so awesome. I can't wait to share it out there once it gets created. And we love our Patreon so much. We're always humbled by their support. So right now we want to thank each and every one of our associate producers, and they are Vikram Bhatt, Chad Clark, Corey Clay, Brad DeMag, William Edward M. Jr., Andy Fark, Kimberly Francis, Jonathan Hamilton, Ryan Jeffs, Sean Lynn, Rick Mason, Jamie McGregor, Ross McKinney, Alan
Aaron Mollenkopf, Sarah Ledoux, Helen Reed, Sarah Ruttlinger. See, I'm doing this with one eye because of my jalapeno aisle, so that's okay. Tim Robertson, Desi Rogers, Greg Rozier, Eric Sakian, Adam Sanders, Tim Serdar, Heather Sohn, Blake Strike, Lisa Tomlinson, Ron Robel, Kalia Zawaki. I got the right pronunciation when we were in Long Island. And the gracious and wonderful Connie Hutchins. Oh my God, she's so great. You got to get down here, get her a drink, buy her a drink at the bar.
I have a question for you real quickly.
Yeah.
When you put your hands up to your face, were they jalapeno business?
Just do your section.
Of course, we want to thank our producing Patreonicals for their support. They are Mike Bovia, Steve Bovia, Kyle Castillo, Peter Craig, Andy Davenport, Craig Ewing, Jackie and Chris Hackney, Brian Hackwith, Kimberly Hartman, David Hood, Lionel Marchand, Matt McGonigal, Jim McMahon, Darren Metcalf, Charlie Mulvey, Sean O'Halloran, Casey Pettit, Jamie Rogers, Casey Shafsky, Terry Scholl, Jim Stoffel, Chris Trebuzio, Christina Werther, and the lovely and talented Jess Vashon. Dan, the senior producer of Trek Geeks for now and all time, is the non-jalapenoed Jude Tatman.
Oh, Jude Tatman, he's fantastic. I mean, he's just great over there in England, and he's a good man, and he's jumping around and dancing with his mother and having a good time. Hi, Jude.
You too can become a producer of Trek Geeks, so easy to do. Head on over to patreon.com/trekgeeks for all the details. Dan, that was obviously a great panel that we had with Armin and Ethan, we had a ton of other stuff going on that weekend.
Oh my God, we sure did. Lots of fun and great stuff. We had panels, we had friends, we had Arnold. So next time we sit down, we're going to give our full recap of Trek Long Island, and it's all right here next time on Trek Geeks, the flagship.
You know. Just a flagship thing.
Just a flagship, yep.
Yeah. And of course, as a flagship, that means we have other ships. So for more great Star Trek discussion, please check out the other member podcasts here on Trek Geeks. So many fantastic shows by just passionate fans who are having great discussions about this franchise we love. You can find all our podcasts and get a link to your favorite podcast player by visiting trekgeeks.com/listen.
Trek Geeks. No one talks Trek like we do.
That's because they can't. And of course, for all the news on all the Star Trek show, please visit our great friends at treknews.net. For now, this has been episode number... Oh, this is our pie episode. 314, ooh, baby.
Pie, I love pie.
Go out there and get yourself some pie. Live long and prosper.
Coconut cream pie.
Music for Trek Geeks is provided by 5-Year Mission. They're writing an original song for each episode of Star Trek. Hear more of their music at 5YearMission.net. Trek Geeks is a production of Coconut Media Works. Executive producers Bill Smith and Dan Davidson. For more great Star Trek discussion, discover the other shows of the Trek Geeks Podcast Network at TrekGeeks.com or find us in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app.
Good morning, Dan.
Oh, wow. It is morning, isn't it?
It is morning. We don't often do this in a morning.
We don't. Long time we've done it. It's cloudy and dreary here in New England today.
Do you remember the first time we recorded in the morning?
No, I don't.
I do.
I don't.
And I do. Do you know why?
I don't know why. I'm afraid to know why.
Well, I'll tell you.
Oh, God. Dan. Here we go.
The first time we ever recorded in the morning was when I did the Trek NPR thing on the Trek, the STLV for Noobs episode.
Oh, that was the first time we did it in the morning?
Yeah, and you did Coconut for the very first time.
Wow, that's crazy.
Now, I understand why that may be of concern to you, because that was a long... Frickin' time ago.
That was a long time ago. That was like, I don't know, what, 9 years ago? Over?
About.
Yeah.
About. Yesterday, You and I observed the anniversary 10 years ago at Trek Boss, the last Creation Star Trek convention in Boston.
Yeah.
Where I asked you a question, hey, would you ever want to start a podcast? And you said, nope. What's no. a podcast in
What's
that order?
What's a podcast?
That is the fateful phrase that launched
an empire.
Yep, absolutely. It is. And that's all right. I'm good with it. I like that. 10 years ago. Good Lord. How about that?
Which means we're coming up on 10 years since the first episode of Trek Geeks in January.
That's right. Because it did take a while to finally get it going. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you just.
Because I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, podcast or something. Like,
you figure it out. I'm just showing up.
Nothing's changed in 10 years then, pretty much.
I know. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's been a very busy week for me. I'm exhausted, but one of the reasons I'm exhausted is because I was up extremely late this past Monday night because, of course, our Boston Celtics won Banner 18. So,
yes.
As with every championship, I stay up for hours after the game watching all of the interviews and breakdown and celebrations and everything. So I was on cloud nine, but I'm tired.
Hey, do me a favor. Move your mic away from you a little bit.
Yes.
There you go.
There we go.
You don't have to lean into it. You're just fine where you are.
I got a loud voice, and I'm proud of it.
Yes, you do. Dan, I'm telling you, you've got a loud voice.
You got to talk about Trek Long Island and all the things we did. It's going to be great when we do the recap. Oh, my God. It's going to be fantastic.
See, now you're leaning in when you do Schwarzenegger. You're just blowing the levels all over the place.
That's what he does.
Dan, you've got to get out of there. Get the hell out of here. Get away from the mic. Back away. Back away.
I saw a great meme yesterday on Instagram of the predator sitting alone on a log, and the caption was, "Nobody asked me if I wanted to get in the chopper."
That's awesome. I like that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Get in the chopper.
In the chopper, you son of a bitch.
Dylan.
Favorite part of that movie.
Oh, so I know.
Always will be. Yep.
And then there's the handshake.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe that they kept my arm in that shot. That was amazing. It looked great.
No comment.
None.
No, at all. No comment. There's so many comments that are just going to make this not fit for really anybody to listen to, let alone families.
Yes, yes, yes.
Of course, we've kind of wandered away from the family thing ever since we started tagging some episodes as explicit, which
true.
I'm okay with.
I'm fine with it. You know what? We still have a dozen or so listeners, so that hasn't caused a problem. So thank you.
Oh, that many?
Thank you, 12.
Maybe that many?
Could be a baker's dozen by now.
13?
Why is there a difference between a dozen and a baker's dozen?
Because the baker's dozen is 13.
Why?
Because.
Thanks. That's a great answer. I appreciate that. Wow.
Hey, I gave you the answer and you didn't like it.
Because.
So. No, I gave you 13 and you're like, well, why? It's like, don't ask why. Just be thankful.
Okay. Why is a baker's dozen 13? Okay, there's a few theories.
Oh my God, you actually figured out how to use Google.
I did. The most widely accepted theory is it has to do with avoiding a beating. So basically, you, because you always avoid a beating when I'm with you. In medieval England, there were laws that related the price of bread to the price of the wheat used to make it. Bakers were found to be cheating their customers by overpricing undersized loaves, subject to strict punishment, including fines or flogging.
It's a shame we can't do that now with all the corporate greed-based inflation that's going on.
Exactly. So there's actually a real reason for that. Okay. See, that is your lesson for today here on Trek Geeks.
In the almost 30 years I've known you, I think that's the first time you've pulled up Google to look something up before you've asked me about it.
Actually, no, I have. I just haven't looked like I have.
Oh, you're
this
so
time I was
stealth.
Like this. Like I was like type. Yeah.
And I'm amazed you were actually able to type it mostly correctly off the bat.
It was probably wrong, but it knew that it was me and just fixed it.
I get it.
Yeah. What is the Borkers dozer or something like that is probably what I typed and it figured it out. So
I'm the keymaster. Are you the gatekeeper? I want you to know that. This week, obviously, there's been this heat dome over the eastern United States and the Northeast.
Yeah.
You actually had it warmer in New Hampshire.
Yes.
Than I had it in North Carolina.
Yep.
people are like, oh my God, you moved to North Carolina. It's so hot. I'm like, not as hot as it is in New Hampshire. Right?
Nope. I was riding the spider on Wednesday, because I brought it up to the place that I bought it from to have an oil change and inspected. And while I was on the highway going up there, the gauge on the bike said 101.
Wow.
Yep. And it was humid too, which doesn't help. If it was just, you know, 100 and not humid, it would be much easier to take. It's like Vegas. I mean, it's always hot in Vegas, but it's not like awful. Like you're walking into like melted cheese is what it's like when you walk into the humidity here in New England sometimes.
Walking into melted cheese.
All I can think of is that meme of Homer Simpson kind of like backing in out of the bush. And that's just like melted cheese of humidity in New England. Sometimes.
Except he's walking into Velveeta.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
Yummy.
I mean, just the concept of being covered in cheese. But now we're becoming a completely different podcast. I apologize. I really apologize.
Yeah. On that note, maybe we should just stop.
Podcasting?
No. Or? Well, some people might breathe a sigh of relief if that were the case, but that's not happening.
That's true.
Uh-huh.
After 10 years, we ain't going anywhere.
Nope, not any place at all.
Today is the 1 year anniversary of my layoff.
Yes.
From the world's greatest company. a major HR, human capital management services provider that may have its logo on an NBA jersey.
Of a team that did not win the championship.
That's correct.
But it's funny because this week, one of the things that I'm responsible for doing is shutting down access for people when they have left the company. And at the beginning of the week, we had a few. And my partner, who's like just always like freaking out that something weird is going to happen, is like, oh, did you see all the ones that came in? Oh, is there going to be another layoff this week? Oh, and I said, what do you care? What, you have no control over it. Relax. But there wasn't. There wasn't anything this week, so.
They had one on June 22nd the year before.
Yeah.
In which my manager was let go. And then a year to the day, I was let go. Yeah. I was expecting, I'm looking for next week sometime.
Yeah. So we'll see. We shall see. I don't care.
Good times.
I'm just going with the flowing.
Going with the flowing.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a t-shirt if I've ever heard it.
I like that idea. And it could be like a wall of cheese. Going with the flowing.
Oh my goodness.
See?
We need to start a cheese podcast.
Wow. Okay.
And we could call it It's Pretty Gouda.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. No?
All right, we'll go with it.
All right, let's record.
I'm trying to think of something and I can't, so because I'm slow.
Don't I know it? No. That was gonna be terrible. I was gonna say you're such a that doesn't even work. I was going to try to work in fondue, but.
Okay. Don't. Just don't.
Okay.
I was just about to start. That's funny.
Well, then stop dawdling. Sorry, already.
I have to mute my phone. I forgot to mute my phone, yo.
You should have done that 9.5 minutes ago.
I forgot, but then something came in and I'm like, oops. All right, here we go. Trek Geeks is proud to have Fansets as our presenting sponsor. You know, Fansets is the place for amazing pin collectibles with over 500 officially licensed Star Trek pins and new releases every month. Stay tuned for a special discount code that'll be good on your next order at fansets.com. Fansets. Our pins have character.
I lost my train of thought. For those of you on Patreon, this was this moment where I was taunting Dan, trying to get him to break.
Didn't.
And he didn't, and I broke because I'm ill-equipped.
I'll just say I'm glad we're not video recording yet.
Next time.
Yep, that's right.
On Trek Geeks.
Okay.
All right.